what has Risk Five done for you lately? Hey there. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, and yes, we are talking about Risk Five today with Rick O'Connor, Executive Director of the Risk Five Foundation. But before we jump into the best thing to happen to microprocessors in the last decade, let's head on over to another frontier. The final frontier. Space. Now, did you hear about the galaxy with no dark matter? Yeah, it's called NGC 1052 DF2. All right, let's back up a second. Dark matter refresher time. Dark matter, which most of the universe consists of, does not absorb or reflect light and can only be detected indirectly through its gravitational interactions with other celestial bodies. Since its discovery in 1933 by Swiss astrophysicist Fritz Zwicky, scientists have been on the hunt for this mysterious building block of the universe. In the universe as we know it, dark matter far outweighs everything else. In our own Milky Way, the ratio is about 30 to 1. In some dwarf galaxies, however, it's more like 400 to 1. So, it's everywhere. And what we know about dark matter is shifting. Several years ago, a team of astronomers discovered a filament of dark matter had connected two neighboring galaxy clusters. And a more recent theory from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory contends that dark matter may actually interact with planets, forming these long filaments or hairs of invisible particles. So, for a galaxy to be completely devoid of dark matter is something quite intriguing. So, when Yale University researchers were calculating the mass of NGC 1052 DF2, they found that its visible 10-star clusters accounted for almost all of its mass. Even more intriguing, this galaxy was also quite different from how it appeared in the Sloan Digital Sky Survey data versus what this team observed using their Dragonfly Telephoto Array Telescope. So of course, as you can imagine, it was time to bring in the big guns. So they next tried out some stereoscopic observations using the Keck Observatory in Hawaii, and then even pulled in some help from the good old Hubble Space Telescope. And these observations only further supported their theory that NGC 1052 DF2 has no dark matter. So why is this observation so cool? Well, the prevailing scientific theory is that regular old matter and dark matter generally join up together in the same place, since dark matter is attracted to the gravitational pull of ordinary matter. But NGC 1052 DF2 throws that off. And, well, so does Dragonfly 44, a galaxy discovered in 2016 that contains almost no ordinary matter. Dragonfly 44 is around 99.99% dark matter. So, does this new discovery completely change how we view dark matter, ordinary matter, Newton's laws of motion, and the universe itself? Probably not. But we now know that we know way less than we thought we knew, which is always important. If you want more information about this new discovery, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on EEJournal.com. All right, it's time for a little microprocessor fun. Let's bring in Rick O'Connor and get down to some serious Risk Five business. Hi, Rick. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first, what are the overall goals of the Risk Five Foundation? And tell me a little bit about how this foundation came about.
Sure. Risk Five is an open instruction set architecture that originates out of the work by the computer science group at UC Berkeley. The V in Risk Five is Roman numeral five, as in the fifth generation of architecture research at Berkeley, which dates back to the 80s under Dave Patterson's work, right? So for any of our listeners out there who, you know, have a Patterson and Hennessy textbook computer architecture design textbook. It's that Dave and that lab. And this V, the 5 and RISC-V is, as I said, the fifth generation of RISC architecture research at Berkeley. So there was more than Dave. The actual research work was led by Kirsta Asanovich and a bunch of his PhD candidates. And they got working on a new ISA, a clean slate design, back in 2010. It took a while. They had a bunch of test chips, and a whole lot of research papers published along the way. And it became obvious as from one research paper to the next that got published, if they changed something or when they changed something, because that's what researchers do, they're playing around and doing stuff. As they changed things, it became obvious that they had developed a following in the community, both certainly in other academic institutions, but maybe just as importantly, and perhaps more importantly, outside of academia and industry. And when they would make changes, they'd get feedback saying, hey, wait a minute, you can't change that. I really like what you did back there, and I'm starting to use it. So no, you can't change it. Which sort of led the team at Berkeley to understand that, this thing probably needs to exist beyond, outside the four walls of Berkeley, not just an internal Berkeley project, because of the amount of interest and uptake that was happening sort of in the broader industry. So the conclusion was, around mid-2014, that's when the discussion started to happen around, boy, this is bigger than a Berkeley project. Over the course of the following year, got ourselves organized to launch the foundation in August of 2015 as a nonprofit standards body to govern the evolution of the RISC-V ISA.
So, Rick, how can my audience get involved with the RISC-V Foundation?
Well, RISC-V.org at the site. There's a membership tab. People can join. You can join as an individual. Your company can join, and a whole group within a company can participate. There's also a number of open forums where there's just discussion that happens in the general public without being a member. You don't need to be a member to play with RISC-V and participate in where this is going. And all of that info is on the site to get to it. There's a membership tab for folks who want to join, and there's under the support tab, there's access to the mailing list for various topics like hardware-related discussion, software-related discussion, ISA-specific discussion, and so on.
Cool. So tell me about the specifications you guys are working on.
Well, there's a number of specs. I mean, the ISA is pretty unique in that there's nothing structured, ISA-wise, there's nothing structured the way the RISC-V ISA exists with any other ISA, any of the either open ones that came previously or proprietary ones that are in the industry, such as x86 or ARM. The biggest structural difference is that from the get-go, the RISC-V ISA is a module-based or extension-based set of instructions in that they're compartmentalized into only the extensions that you would need for a particular application. So, for instance, there's integer instructions, multiply divides, atomics, and so on. And depending on what you're building, from a very low-end, IoT-like controller right through to a server class machine, you will need different sets of instructions or different extensions in your processor that you'd utilize for those end products, those processors. So as such, the way that we evolve the actual ISA is by adding more extensions, right? So we have a vector extension group that's active right now. We have certainly a lot of work around the privilege spec that's active right now. We have a memory model task group that's very active. We have a security task group that's very active. There's a number of initiatives. There's a debug task group that's very, very active. There's a number of initiatives that are underway that are very much keeping us busy.
So, Rick, have you seen a lot of momentum from the industry around RISC-V?
Well, very much so. We have been staggering, actually. It's kind of been drinking from a fire hose without trying to get any water on the floor. We have over 100 members, both consisting of corporations and individuals, actually getting close to about 150 now. Just about 100 of those are companies or universities. And, that growth is staggering. We had our last workshop in November, this past November, hosted by Western Digital. We had room for 490 people. We had something like 495 registered, and we had 540 through the door. And that group represented more than 130 different companies and 35 universities or something like that represented amongst the attendees. And so it's amazing, actually, the traction. It's clearly a shiny new toy in industry. Anybody in either the tool side, the hardware side, software side, and certainly processor side has either started a project or is going to start a project exploring what the possibilities are and benefits are of RISC-V. Certainly the the most interesting thing that's happened in the microprocessor space in the last decade.
Okay, so following on that, how do you see the RISC-V foundation and industry adoption of RISC-V growing over the next few years?
Right, so it's really about the industry adoption and not so much about the foundation growth. The biggest thing is, you know, with any new standard or new architecture, the ecosystem and the strength of the ecosystem and the rate that it gets fleshed out, so to speak, so that people can count on the technology is key. And in my role as executive director at the foundation, I get to see behind the curtain of all of our members in terms of what people are working on. Clearly, I don't get to talk about them until they're ready to talk about them. But the amount of announcements and adoption, either on the tool side, on the software tool chain side, on the cores, both open and proprietary cores and processors being announced, is pretty staggering. For instance, just as an example, you know, at the Western Digital Workshop, Martin Fink, the CTO of Western Digital, provided sort of an overview of how that Western Digital sees the adoption of RISC-V going within their organization. And he commented that, you know, across the breadth of their storage platforms, be it USB stick, thumb drive kind of things, right through to high-end cloud server class storage, they ship in the order of 1 billion cores a year across all of those devices and expect that to double in the next few years. And there are all kinds of different architectures because of the differences in these products. One of the benefits of RISC-V, the ISA, is that you could conceivably cover the waterfront of those end applications inside Western Digital, all using the RISC-V ISA. And Martin, in fact, publicly made that commitment that Western Digital will be converting over those billion, soon to be 2 billion cores a year, all to RISC-V-based architectures. So it's pretty staggering, the momentum and adoption that we're seeing.
Very cool. All right, Rick, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you're a bit of a road bike enthusiast, so where's your favorite place to go bike around?
Where's my favorite place to bike around? Well, we have, in the area that I live in, there's a nice green space, a park that is probably just about, the entrance to it's probably about a 15-minute road bike from my door. It's called Gatineau Park. It's federally controlled land that will stay green with lakes and rivers and mountains. And it's a beautiful spot. Being in the Northeast, deciduous trees and so on, in the fall time frame, the colors there are famous, right? Tourists come from around the world to see the fall colors in that area, all up and down the Northeast for that matter. But this particular area is quite special. Put it on your bucket list.
Excellent. I will. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Rick.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And bring your road bike when you come.
Oh, I will.
Thanks, Amelia.
Speaking of new frontiers, what about the new frontier of FPGA expansion cards? We all know that FPGA expansion cards, FMC and FMC Plus, allow easy connection of a wide variety of peripherals to FPGA development boards. But FMC and particularly FMC Plus put big demands on connector technology. In a new episode of Chalk Talk entitled ANSI Vita 57.4 2016 FMC Plus, the new frontier of FPGA expansion cards, I sit down with Matthew Burns of Samtech and chat about FMC and FMC Plus standards and the connectors that make them work. You can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section of eejournal.com, can't miss it, it's right on the top banner there, or head on over to YouTube, keyword eejournal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can check out our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's fish frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, even if your company makes it, that's totally okay. Any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of March 30th, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.